You may kill me, but you may never insult me. Who am I? Captain Jack Sparrow.
Get the truth about movies on the movie show.
If he were telling the truth, he wouldn't have told us.
Tell them, Sparrow!
Unless, of course, he knew you wouldn't believe the truth, even if he told it.
Hello?
Joey, it's Ross. I need some help.
Help has come your way, because you are listening to the movie show.
What is up?
How's it going?
This is the movie show.
On Active FM.
And we are doing the worst Quentin Tarantino film. And he said it is his worst film. Yeah, we're not even like out here being like, yeah, we think in our personal opinion.
Didn't he say that because of what it made?
The bad reviews, yeah.
Yeah.
So he, people, when
but
this
he enjoyed
film,
making it, though.
He loved making it.
Yeah.
But when it came out, people were just like, what on earth? And then it didn't do well. And then he was like, okay, guys, you know what? It's my worst film. But then he said, because we all know that, okay, we might not all know this, so I'm going to say it. Quentin Tarantino has stated that he will only direct 10 films, only, in his whole career. He will then go on to write novels. He said he wants to do theater productions as well. So, like, when he's done his 10th film, he's currently made 9, so he's got one more left. And once he's done that one, he then wants to go on to, you know, a much simpler life of writing books and doing stage plays.
Wow. Yeah.
So, in his words, this is his worst film. But then he said, yeah, if you think this is my worst film, it's still a good film, which means my worst film is not the worst film. It's actually a pretty good, bad film.
Yeah.
If you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, watching this, I was just like, oh, okay. But then, getting a bit of reference and background about the film. So, this film was part of, like, so, okay. In history, there was a time when the household television took over and killed the cinema star.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they started doing is they started making weird movies. Well,
but the reason for that was, yeah, city cinemas specifically took,
yes,
a hit because people were staying at
they
home.
They were sitting at home.
So those city cinemas decided to play cheaper films at cheaper rates. But these cheaper films were like slasher films.
Exploitation
and like,
films.
Yeah, like hectic films.
Like weird stuff, like cannibalism, death. Like I almost feel like that's where the horror like era like almost started.
But there's horror and then there's like slasher
like
film.
This is weird.
This
film.
This is a slasher film.
Yeah.
This is like...
And that pulled everyone in.
Yeah.
So this was almost...
But apparently that film era, even though it was like cheap films, you can't like almost... be like, okay, yeah, whatever, it was just a bad period for the film history, or film period, whatever. But because that film era gave rise to people like James Cameron.
Yeah.
So his first, one of his first films was those type of films. So like, it is, even though it's an ugly part of the film era, it's like an essential part type of thing because it gave rise to many people that we know today. Yeah.
Hmm. But you don't think that he would have maybe started off, like instead of him doing a film like that so that it could be go out in cinema, maybe he would have done a different film.
This film's weird though, because, so what would happen was in those days you'd have what you call a double feature, right? So that's when you're actually getting two movies. So you watch two separate movies, but they play right after one another. Now this film, Death Proof, was his fifth, Quentin Tarantino's fifth film, is actually a double feature, and both movies together are called Grindhouse. And the second movie was directed by Robert Rodriguez, and he made a film that was about zombies, and it was called Silent Something. No, I forgot. I can't find the name of the second film. But basically, those two films work together. It's called Planet Terror. There we go. So that movie is basically all about these... I think it's also women who fight zombies. But also, it's a slasher film. So it's not like... It's yeah, it's gory. It's over gory, etc., etc. And then this film, Death Proof, was more of like a car chase. That was the theme. Together, both of those films were 4 hours in length. But then, obviously, separate, this film is just under 2 hours.
Yeah, there's the four-hour thing again.
Yes. But then, this film, Quentin Tarantino also released it by itself, especially at like the Cannes Film Festival and stuff. And then he actually added footage. So there's an extended version of the movie, and then there's the version that was released as the double feature with Planet Terror. So quite an interesting concept, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Quite weird.
But people didn't. They weren't like. Yeah. They really weren't.
People were just like, okay.
Yeah. Which I find slightly sad.
Nothing too much, but looking at that era and the whole death of like the film and how it relates to Mike the stuntman.
Yes.
And how he was trying to bring back to life the whole thing of stuntman, like he had a sore spot. And so now he was almost taking it out on...
Well, he had a weird way of like taking it out.
Like a lot of women and the scar. Remember I told you about the eye patch? Remember I said, I don't know why I see the guy with the eye patch.
And then he has a scar over
and
his
then
eye.
He's got a scar, and I'm like, that eye. There's something about that eye. That eye. Either eye patch or scar. What else?
Kurt Russell wasn't originally, though, Quentin's first choice for the role of Stuntman Mike. Stuntman Mike, if you haven't watched this film, basically he's a stuntman who hasn't had the best career, and the film industry is changing, CGI is coming in, so they don't need stuntmen to do the things that they used to do anymore, and so he's kind of out of work, etc. So in order to get back the same feeling that he felt when he was doing those stunts, he decides to take the car that was built for the stunts and kill women with it.
Death
literally,
proof.
That's how he gets... what is wrong with you?
And death-proofing a car is an actual concept. It's a stunt. It's how they make a stuntman's car, or like especially... I don't know if you've ever been to a bumper car, like rally type of thing, where they just like keep bumping each other and smashing. So it's death-proofing the car for the stuntmans. Although I highly doubt that, though, because like, for example, in the film, like there's a head-on collusion. Like, that old head-on collision was just like, what?
But he survived.
Yes.
He was the one person who survived.
Although, in that one, the car sort of goes over.
Yeah.
Where, in a head-on collision, if they hit, like okay, fact. Two cars, if they have a head-on collision at 60 kilometers an hour, work that out in your miles, that would kill, like, basically everyone in the car.
Only 60?
Yeah, because of your organs and all. Go look it up. Go look at the medical. Because of the dead stop, the force from this side, the force from the opposite end, they hit each other, even at 60 k's an hour, will be fatal. Like, you might be like, oh, I'm fine. Next minute, yeah, there's probably blood coming out of your ears or something like that, because your brain has hit the front of your skull at such a speed, it's probably... You know, take jello, take jelly, throw it against the wall,
nice,
see what it does. That's what I'm talking about.
I feel like you'd have to take two things of jelly and throw it at each other and have them hit one another at the same. Then you'd know.
At this point, we need footage of jelly in slow-mo in the air. One red, one green.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's
so that you can
see
exactly, so you can see exactly what each one does.
Can I just say, as gory as that crash was... And it was gory. It was brilliantly done, which is so weird because it's such a graphic scene. It's like literally you have a close up of what happens to the chick's face. Like each chick. In fact, there's four chicks in the car. Mm. They show you exactly what happens, and they even have time to put in a Wilhelm scream. I don't know. Now's not the time to be bringing comedy into the situation. But yeah, like it was brilliantly filmed. Do you know that Quentin Tarantino was the DOP for this film?
As well.
He chose to do the cinematography. I was like, oh my good. And the shots are brilliant. The shots really are good in this film. Like, he does that 360 table turn conversation in the restaurant with the latter. You know, there's the four girls that come in later on. Apparently, Kurt Russell was in that scene. I think you could see him sitting in the background.
It's the
which is very freaky.
You see, now that we think of Pulp Fiction and how we think of this film, it is...
When I watched a video on this film, the person that was speaking about it was actually saying that this film paid homage, even though it's not set in the 1960s and 70s, it's actually set modern day. The reason you know that is because, I don't know if you remember, what was the radio presenter's name? You know who I'm talking about, in the beginning. So she's messaging that guy to come join them at the bar, and the type of phone she's using is a modern phone. Well, not now, but back then.
Yeah.
So you know it's set modern. But then it starts, the way so you can see it's film that's been used, and a some segments are in black and white, which is the 60s era. It's not the modern era. And then other segments, like the footage is very grainy, very scratched, and even at times there's jumps in the footage. And the reason he did that was because in those days, so you'd film a film on film. That's what's called a film, because you literally used film to shoot your movie. Then you'd edit the film. So in other words, you'd actually cut and put the film, not, you wouldn't put it into a computer, and then you'd actually be using the actual film. And then
close up take, long shot take, cut it at 45 degrees, you join it together, you...
And even the black and white thing was quite interesting, because if they, for example, like, I think they said if they lost the negatives, then they'd have to put it in black and white. So, like, sometimes films in those days would actually suddenly turn black and white just because they lost the... What is it that makes it color?
I don't know. That's why I'm like,
I'm not very... The film. But I know there were times where... So, that the one of the segments that was in black and white, they were, like, saying it could have been homage to those times in the film industry where something was lost and then they only had the black and white version of the scene. So, they had to now use the black and white... version. But then also on top of that, you would send a film reel now to the cinemas, and now they would play the film for when people were watching the movie. So nothing was digital. And then what would happen was sometimes, like, if the film wasn't sent in the right packaging, or if it wasn't treated correctly, then you'd get the scratches. Obviously, if it tore, they'd have to stick it back together, but then you'd literally lose a piece of the movie. That's why there'd be a jump. So what Quentin Tarantino was doing was he was literally paying homage to that film era, but also treating the footage itself like the footage would have been in that era. But then at the same time, it also pays homage to Stuntman Mike, because Stuntman Mike's peak in his career was the 1960s and 70s. Those were the types of films he was doing his work in. And now he was being forgotten as the film industry modernized, etc., etc. And then also what it represents is that, so whenever they show the footage as being that 1960s, 70s style, it's that Stuntman Mike is in, he's got like the power and he's controlling things. And then even... when he's scouting the second group of girls to murder the second group of girls, it's in black and white. And in the 1960s and 70s, it was very expensive to print color photographs. And actors would have to send headshots of themselves out to, like, many studios. And it was cheaper to print your headshots in black and white than in color. So most casting calls had black and white photographs involved. And he was doing a casting call for his next victims. So that's why that part, that scene, while he's there, it's black and white. And then as soon as he leaves, it becomes color. Because now he's not doing the casting call anymore. But then also, the whole movie isn't like that. So it doesn't, it's not all that full grainy film footage that's cutting and stuff. What happens is when the second set of girls show up, they're also in the film industry. So the one is a makeup artist, the one is an actress, and then two are stunt. They also do stunts.
The stunts driver, and then the New Zealand stunts woman who actually acts as herself.
Yes. Who is a, she is Zoe. A stunt woman. Yeah, Zoe, right? Bell.
Yeah.
She did all of the stunt work for Uma Thurman in Kill Bill. Right?
Wow, cool.
How cool is that? And then also when Quentin cast her, he then said to her, we're going to get a stunt person in for you. So, and she was like, why? You're paying me to do what I do. So she actually does all of her stunts. So her hanging out of the car... That scene was...
That's crazy stuff.
I was freaking out.
Yeah.
And the fact that she was hanging on the car as well...
Yeah.
...is insane.
I saw her gloves that she was wearing. I was like, oh, that's nice. Because, I mean, you wouldn't be able to...
No, you wouldn't be able to hold the grip. Yeah.
Not a chance.
But then when they... So the film basically ends with them as girls in the film industry now, like, giving Stuntman Mike his own medicine type of thing. Yeah. So it wasn't even about justice. It was just that he had started this cat-mouse chase and they decided they weren't going to lose it. Literally, that wasn't a call for justice or anything like that. So they then go after him and then end up beating him to death and killing him. But then whenever they step in, the footage stops being the whole 60s thing. And it's almost like Quentin was showing now they've got control. So I like how he did these these things that you wouldn't actually pick up, but you can actually like tie it up with
just some like creative ideas.
But it's not just okay, let's make it black and white for fun. You know, it's we're making it black and white because of which. Yeah. So I personally, the first part of the film was very slow.
Yeah.
It was very slow. It was just like conversations. It was mainly just conversations. And then as soon as the first murder happens, then you're like, oh my goodness. And then after that, you now know what he's about. So you know what he's capable of.
From that went pretty quickly.
Yeah. And then the four girls, I really enjoyed that part of the film. And then obviously the fact that because I was just like, he's going to kill them. And then he doesn't. He is murdered.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I personally
agree. Most of the time throughout the film, I'm like, how many of these cast does he have? Because the way that he just like,
And they would have done all of that for real, because Quentin Tarantino is not. Quentin Tarantino literally believes that the digitalization of the film industry is the ruin of the film industry.
Yeah.
Which in a way, I understand where he's coming from. I really do.
There's two things to it. It's the amount of work and fun that goes into it. Okay, now you need to get film. This is the way you got to handle it. Remember, we got to shoot this like this because you've only got about, what was it, like 9 minutes of time per reel. And then there's the development. And then this is how we're going to cut it. It's a lot of fun. This is how we get used to it, you know, et cetera. Then cinema goes in cinema. It's not easily accessible. So it makes it a lot more, you know, you see people getting dressed. They're coming there. There's popcorn.
An event.
They're renting. They're renting. They're sitting in the movie house, big screen. The sound's ready, blah, blah, blah. Where nowadays, like I was actually thinking about it, watching one of his interviews, how today, I mean, I just now pull out my phone, select a movie.
Watch it.
In fact, on no jokes, on Saturday, me and my family were trying to find a good movie to watch, and we were literally going through trailers. So, that looks like a good film. Okay, wait, trailer, play the trailer. No, not a good movie. Because the problem was that, I've spoken about it before, where you look for a good movie to watch by looking at the cover of the film. And the problem is that every movie doesn't look interesting.
That is so
except
true.
Except the ones that you've watched. So, that's when we were like, okay, let's see this one. Okay, let's see the trailer. No, that's not good at all. Okay, stay away from that one. You know, cover my kids' eyes. Okay, no, we're not watching that one. So we literally went through a whole lot of trailers for about a good 45 minutes.
That's the thing. They actually have a term for it. I think it's called something like search fatigue or something like that, where you're browsing on a streaming site for something to watch and you can't find anything. And eventually you're just like...
Yeah.
That's what I personally do if I want to find a movie. I'll search either a director and then look at the movies he's made.
Yeah.
Or I'll search an actor that I like and enjoys their performance and their work. And then, stuff like that.
I did Christian Bale.
Yeah.
Like his older films are like, okay, no. I wanted to watch American Psycho. Is it American Psycho?
Isn't that with Tom Cruise?
Possibly, but then, it's not a family film.
Wait. American Psycho is the one where Christian Bale lost weight, wasn't it?
Possibly.
When he got very skinny.
Possibly.
I think that's that one.
That was the one that I definitely wanted to watch. And then I searched, per director, and I was just like, okay, this is not working, because I've got to find a family film, you know what I'm saying? Anyway, so that's what it is today now. It's a streaming site. You go from movie to movie, and then you even decide halfway, okay, no, stop. Okay, let's watch another one. Where you go to movie house, you got your selection. Or, I mean, how many times do you actually go to cinema? You're like, I don't know what film I'm going to watch. Most of the time, you're like, no, we want to go watch, this. It just came out. Really awesome.
There's hype.
Let's go watch it. Exactly.
But also, so like, I feel like the generation we live in as well is... also problematic when it comes to the film industry, because like we live in a social media generation, which means that most people's attention span is very short. Most people cannot sit through a film these days.
Yeah.
They actually can't. Then so there's that side which people now can't watch a movie because it's 2 hours long or whatever. Then the other side is you have people who now binge watch and literally will sit and watch a series that isn't actually that great. It's just there's a three-way love triangle, and that's what's keeping them watching
and
it now.
And every time it ends, it's like,
and
ends
they're
in a
dragging
high.
It, and the story's yeah. trash, and the cinematography's trash, and the acting is trash.
No,
everything's
the cinematography's never trash.
No, sometimes the cinematography's trash. Yeah. And but then I watch that for 12 hours consecutively, as in they literally sit down for 12. I mean, who watches TV for 12 hours? What's wrong with you? No. Sorry for all the bingers out there.
Can't
I'm
do that.
Not one of those people. But like, so you have two extremes of either not being able to watch because my attention span is so short, or I'm willing to watch trash for 12 hours just because I want to binge. Do you understand what I'm saying? So now, like, the film, the quality of the film industry has gone out of the window. Plus, now it's just a money-making scheme because you've got all of these different streaming sites that want to have the best and the latest and the most unique show that everyone's going to leave that streaming site and come to this streaming site. So forget about quality. Let's just make something that people will be super hyped over.
Yeah.
And then it's not even good at the end. The film industry. I feel like I get where Quentin Tarantino says that the digital age has ruined the film industry. On the other side, I understand that making it digital has made it easier for independent filmmakers.
Yeah.
But the thing is, independent filmmakers need to make movies not because they want to become famous, but actually just for the love of film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say that in terms of digital, yes, so what you've just said, but we've already in the movie show, we've discovered directors who probably do use digital. So you can abuse digital because there are like effects and stuff like that, that like it's a comedy show. It's not even a, it's supposed to be a, you know, sci-fi, but it's a comedy show. You're like, what? Did they seriously just do that? Are you serious that they just, like, apparently the Matrix, the latest Matrix, there's a train scene in there. And apparently the CG is like,
bad.
Maybe for an average person, they'll be like, oh, what's wrong? But, you know, there's a lot of stuff. But then there are a lot of directors in that, you know, that sort of the digital sort of filmmaking would actually help them, like, a lot. Like, let's look at, what was that one, Steven Spielberg's film,
Ready Player One. Yeah, no, that.
You see how there's CG in it, but look at how he used CG.
Yeah, I know, he used CG prop. Even The Revenant.
With storytelling, yes.
Revenant was brilliant, and the way they used CG was brilliant. That was really good, though.
Yeah, so there's the two sides of it. So it's like this big garbage bag, like, full of stuff, and you have to get your hands dirty just getting through some of the rubbish, but then there is some of the good stuff.
But you know what's sad? I've stopped watching modern films because, like, I'm constantly disappointed.
It's true. Do you know how often I have to remind myself? I'm like, that's an old movie. I'm like, but wait, hang on.
Old movies are literally this past week, I think I definitely watched three films that were all probably made before 2010. Three films.
Is it?
This past week.
I watched one,
Literally all made before the year 2010. Look, 2010, I'd say to maybe like this year sucked. This year's films, there were like one or two or three that were good.
Yeah.
But most of the films this year have sucked. Mm. Let's be honest. Even last year in 2020, we kind of had like a deficit in films because everything was like put on hold.
Mm.
But like, honestly, at the moment, films are, they're either super political, which makes no sense because your film reality world does not have the political issues that we currently face. So why are you bringing politics into it? So you know the new Rings of Power series, which is a prequel to the Lord of the Rings?
Yeah.
Apparently they've politicized it. So now, in a fantasy world in Middle Earth with elves and dwarves and hobbits, we're now bringing in feminism and racism because now Middle Earth has those problems as well.
Suddenly has a crisis.
What? And that's like the most expensive series ever made. Ever. The most money spent on a series, and that's what we've got. A flop.
All I know is that I won't watch your film.
Whose film?
That person that does that.
Like, what? Why did we move to my film?
the universal you, that one, that makes it.
I also feel like, so if you look at Quentin Tarantino's films, most of his films pay homage to a previous film era. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Look at films today, they're not doing that.
Mm.
And like, I'm not saying we have to always do that, but like, we need to learn from.
I feel like everyone's either trying to copy someone else, or they're trying to do something
political.
Yeah. I don't know how many of them are doing something new and different. It's not. They're always like, yeah, you know, it's, we're going to put a spaceship in there and there's going to be aliens. And then there's going to be time travel in there. And that's going to make it so cool. And it's going to be like, I've seen this. This I've seen.
Or
I've
they seen just go cool. weird. They just yeah. go and they do things that don't make sense. And you get to the end of the movie and you're confused. I recently watched a movie and I got to the end and I was like, I'm so confused. And I had to go watch film reviews to hear other people's opinion on the film because I was actually traumatized. And then when I heard them, I was like, okay, it's not just me. It's okay. Yeah. Because I was literally like, I don't get it. It wasn't the storyline. It was everything.
Look, I think at the end of the day, film or making a movie can either be a story. And I don't watch a lot of like romantic movies and stuff like that just because, yep, anyway, that's just my preference. I won't tell you why, but anyway. Or it's some sort of art form, which it can either be very weird or you can get it and be like, wow, that was really great.
Mm.
So I think film is just that media out there that people will use to express themselves. And it's either going to be really weird or it's going to be like really, really great. Yeah, like we watch Back to the Future and I'll never, like, the acting, like, I really mean this very, very respectfully and out of a way to say that it was really, that I actually enjoyed it, but it was cheesy. And I actually enjoyed it. Like, a lot of the reactions, like, there's the one scene where the bully walks in front of the camera in the foreground and Michael J. Fox is in the background. And, like, the way that Steven Spielberg got the shot, his eyeballs are, like, popping are popping out over the top like this. Like, doing this. And, like, even the fact that they got, like, two young actors as his, as his dad and his mom. Mm. And then you can see how they, like, made the dad, like, look a lot older. And, like, there was just... But we loved... Me and my son, we loved the film. We enjoyed it. It was just such a good... There's the one shot I'll never forget. And it's the first time that the car goes... time travels.
Oh yes.
And the line of fire. So it's heading towards them. Now imagine the time that this was happening, that this film would have taken. I mean, you've probably never seen much of this stuff before, but the car is driving towards this. Okay, Doctor, I can't remember what his name was, but Doc, he's like so confident, and like McFly, you know.
Yeah, he's freaking out.
He's like freaking out, and then the thing disappears. And where the tire tracks were, there's like a thing of fire. They like ends up right between their legs, and then like they look back, and like the feet. I was just like, wow, okay, that's cool. That is so cool. I don't know why, but I love that. I want to see that again.
Hmm.
And then it happens again at the end. And then right at the end, like the car takes. It's like just. It's cinema.
But that's also practical effects.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing. Is
I was just wondering how they actually did that without. No. Yeah, because they would have been hot, you know.
But like, that's the problem.
They probably overlaid it. They overlaid it. That's what they did. Double film and then they mask it and they put it
but
over.
But it's so practical. It's
good
not digital.
Star Wars. Yes. Yes.
The problem is a lot of like. Yeah, I feel like.
Hmm.
Because like even if you look at, I was watching a video, so Corridor Digital, they're a VFX guys.
I'm hoping
they did a whole video.
I'm hoping you're saying the one that I'm hoping you're saying.
Explosions.
No.
Oh no. Okay.
Oh yes, but I did watch that one last
week.
So yeah,
they were busy looking at CG explosions and how accurate they are, and most CG explosions are inaccurate. They are fake. Like super fake. And then they looked at films. They show like a real explosion. Mm. And then
how it should look, how it should react. Like that was so good. I enjoyed that.
And yet we've gotten used to what it, like what we think is an explosion is not an explosion.
I know, I have that explosion CG. So when I watched that, I was like deeply convicted.
But then also though, technology has advanced. So like I know with like explosion simulations and that, there's certain it's improving.
Yeah.
So CG is improving.
You can give it direction. Yeah, you can give it a type of. I watched one today, like Corridor, and this is us advertising Corridor. So Corridor, you should like talk about us sometime. You know, about the catch in Spider-Man.
Oh,
the first Tobey Maguire when he caught all the lunches.
Didn't he do
and
156 or 7 takes?
Like they did that for real. Like there was a practical effect, and then they tried to do it. They tried to simulate it, and they did it in 33 takes. They did it in 33 takes. It was brilliant, and it was hilarious at the same time. But those are practical effects.
Practical is awesome. This though is the only Quentin Tarantino movie that takes place completely in chronological order and without flashbacks.
That's true. I never thought about that.
I didn't think about it either until I read the thing. I was like, oh, wow, it is. Literally a place from start to finish.
That's where you want to phone Quinton up. Quinton, what's happening? Yeah, we were doing the thing so well.
I personally don't think it was a bad film. Can I just say, there were the first part, I didn't enjoy the lap dance like that. I was just like, really? And then the conversation also, like, it was very boyish, if I could put it like that. Because all the conversations were mainly between chicks. But the things the chicks were talking about,
and there were
like
a lot of chicks' feet in this one as well.
Yeah, but that's a Quentin Tarantino thing. It started with chicks' feet on the dashboard.
Yeah.
But like the chicks, what they spoke about, I was just like, a guy definitely wrote this dialogue. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't, and also like his dialogue, it wasn't the greatest dialogue. However, like, I loved the shots, the action, that car chase sequence was brilliant. Mm. Like, I thought that chick was dead. I thought Zoe Bell was dead. I was like, this poor woman.
Yeah.
Like, she shouldn't have done the stunt or the...
And then she comes out the bushes.
I'm okay. So, yeah. Then also, the original name was not supposed to be Death Proof. It was supposed to be Thunderbolt. But in the beginning of the movie, you actually see a screen comes up that says Quentin Tarantino's Thunderbolt, and then glitches, like that old 60s film glitches to Death Proof. So he's still technically, like, put it in for like a few seconds and
choose
then
a name
glitched it out. And then the film, so the actual film itself, was physically scratched to achieve its dirty look.
I was going
to
ask that question.
So it's not like it's not a old age, what's it called? Age film effects.
Yeah, then you can choose how realistic. Search the assets. Overlay. There. Scratched film. No, damaged
on
film.
YouTube.
No, I know enough defects. What is it?
Final Cut, it's aged film.
Yeah, aged.
And then you can choose realistic grain.
Bad TV, that's what he's on off defects.
Bad TV.
Yeah, bad TV. Drag, yeah, no? Drop.
They literally scratched the film to achieve its dirty look rather than digitally scratching it. They practically.
I'm sure Quentin wanted to be there when they did it. Because imagine, oh, it's too much, guys. Can you go back?
We have the second film reel, right?
You guys did copy. You guys didn't copy. Everybody knows you copy the film and then you...
You know the jukebox that was in the bar?
Yeah.
That's Quentin's.
I knew there was going to be something of
Amy
in it. Yeah.
And he transported it all the way to Austin, Texas.
Go fetch my jukebox, will you?
Also, Tarantino came up with the idea of Death Proof when he was having a drunken hotel night with a friend, Sean Penn. You know Sean Penn, right?
Yeah.
Tarantino wanted to buy a Volvo because he didn't want to die in some auto accident like the one in Pulp Fiction. And then in regards to the safety of the car, Sean Penn said, well, you could take any car and give it to a stunt team, and for $10,000 or $15,000, they can death proof it for you. And death proof, the death proof phrase had stuck in his mind after that. And then he came up with the idea of a serial killer stuntman. I think actually the worst type of serial killer could be a stunt person, because like their job was not to die, and now they are trying to kill you.
They would know exactly, because there's obviously a lot of science, and you know there's a lot of stuff,
physics,
a lot of things that we don't think. Like, I know there was a program I was watching, and the guy was testing the car's impact, and he said just before impact he has to take his hands off the steering wheel. Because apparently what happens is when your hands are like this and on impact, you break your wrists.
Eh!
Makes sense, doesn't it? Stuff you never think about before.
So guys, if you get a car accident...
Just go... Ah! Are you okay? I'm
good.
The
movie show saving lives.
I'm good. My wrists are good.
But also, Quinton was actually saying in another interview that the character Stuntman Mike... Most stunt people that he's spoken to have said that they know of a stuntman like that who, not as in the serial killer, but what I'm saying is like the character is not that far off from reality, because like they know of a lot of stuntmen who like they did a couple of work or a couple of movies. The movie or the person they were doing stunts for, like most people don't know. I don't know if you remember, there was that scene in the bar where he was busy telling them, yo, no, I was the person in it. And then
and
eventually he was like, yo, you don't know any of these people do? And then they were like, no, sorry. So like they've done work, but most people don't even know the work that they've done. And now they're kind of out of jobs because like CG and stuff has taken over. Mm. And they even dress like he dressed. So like the skinny jeans, the jacket, the glasses.
And not only that, if you think about it, most stuntsmen, they have to have a similar look-alike and body build as a certain actor.
Yeah.
So if you don't, you know, if that person that you look alike or have the same bodybuilder, let's say you've got five good actors, if they're not in a movie production at that time that is requiring your stunt skill, then
you're out of work.
It's
even like he even portrayed it with Brad Pitt in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Brad Pitt was Leonardo DiCaprio's stunt man, but then eventually he couldn't find work anymore, and so he just started, he would drive Leonardo around. He became like his driver. He'd fix his TV satellites when
I suppose you could be like a practical effects supervisor. Yeah, racing movies, you know, safety, car 101, driving safety.
But I think you still have to have connections.
Stunts, death-proofing cars.
Ooh, there we go.
You know, going to airbag.
Maybe they want to be in the film, though.
Yeah, they do.
Even though no one knows it was them.
Yeah, it's one of those things, you know, he like makes the best airbag and he's just not satisfied.
So he starts killing people.
With his airbags.
You see? But also what I like was that Quentin Tarantino does is his films include film, the film industry. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was like film industry galore. Like,
it's like his
that
opinion
movie.
About something, and then he makes a movie about
it. And then like this one had stuntsmen, makeup artists, like the whole thing was like people who work in the film industry.
True.
Pulp Fiction, she had done a pilot show. Like he'll bring that in. Yeah. So the next film after Death Proof that he made was Inglourious, right? Which personally for me is really at the top of Quentin Tarantino's list. Then after
I'll never forget that German guy.
What Christoph Waltz.
Yes.
His character was
such
beautiful.
A cool guy.
Then it was Django, which was number 7. Which we've watched. So we've watched both of those. And then it was The Hateful Eight. So The Hateful Eight we haven't watched.
Which
and that was his eighth film. And then Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Which
and then his tenth film has not come out yet.
Yeah.
So Quentin Tarantino has one more film to make. We have one more film to review before that film, which is The Hateful Eight. We have done Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. You can go check our previous episodes
there
for those.
You can go right now.
Yeah. But we have almost gone to the end of our Quentin Tarantino marathon.
And then I guess we'll have to pick on another director. Or we'll just...
We have to do The Great Gatsby. I cannot believe... Don't shame me. I watched that movie like 2 weeks ago for the first time properly. And I was just like, this movie is beautiful. But that was Baz as well. 2013.
Yeah.
But it was brilliant.
Yeah.
It was that...
I did mention it in when we did Elvis. That I picked up the similar... You know, there's a trait.
Yeah,
of,
no, Baz has a very...
Baz, yeah.
Very specific trait.
It'll be quite a...
Oh, there's also a film, I don't know if it's good, but there's a film, so when Matt Damon and Ben Affleck were in film school, they wrote a script together, and that was the first big movie that they were in was that script, so they wrote the script specifically so that they could star in it, and that I think it also has Robin Williams in it, that they then made fresh out of film school, and the two of them wrote... The script together.
Yeah, that's the way to go.
So that one, it's called Good Live Hunting or Good Life Hunting. I wrote
Good Will Hunting.
Goodwill. Is it Goodwill? I misspelled
that
it.
That makes a lot of sense.
Wait.
Really?
Yeah.
You
did
said
have you watched it?
Yeah.
I haven't watched it.
You said Matt Damon?
Matt Damon and Ben Affleck.
That makes a lot of sense.
And Robin Williams was in it.
Wow. Yeah, it's with Goodwill. Okay.
Is it Goodwill Hunting?
Goodwill Hunting,
I wrote Good L-I-V-K Hunting.
L-I-V-K?
Do you know what L-I-V-K
means? No, I think your phone
Yeah, no, it changed it. Goodwill Hunting, 1997.
Wow.
And it was written by Ben Affleck and Matt Damon.
Matt Damon's a good actor.
Yeah, see, screenplay, Matt Damon, Ben Affleck.
That's it.
So that could possibly be the... I feel like we're just going to be watching old movies because recent movies suck.
Yeah.
Although Bullet Train was good, right? Have you watched Bullet Train?
I'm going to.
Bullet Train was very good.
I have my hands on
Brad
it now.
Pitt.
Yes, I have my hands on it.
Guy Ritchie feel.
Yes, in fact, that's actually what we were going to watch on Saturday, and then we realized it is not kiddie proof.
Yeah, that one's not.
So we were like, thank you. I had my wife look at the trailer. She just looks at me. She's like, no, not for the kids, my dear.
Kids, go to bed. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Go to sleep. What?
Quickly, honey. Go get the sleeping pills. No, don't do that. I don't do that. I don't do that. Don't do that. That was not recommended by me. It was a joke. Finished. End of the
now
joke.
Now, if you see Ryan's kid sleeping, you're like,
I'm going to feel guilty whenever my kid is sleeping now.
Ryan?
Oh, look at him sleeping. This is not what you think. No, I wasn't going to. No, this is not what you think.
Ryan, why are you so guilty? Why are you acting guilty? No, I swear, Ryan.
Yeah.
Stuntman Ryan.
No.
No. Yeah. So, Death Proof, I specifically enjoyed the end of it. I really enjoyed.
Mike, when he died.
I'm sorry. For what he did to those first girls,
yeah.
I was just like, kill him. Yeah. Those were my honest thoughts.
I thought he was going to just live a bit longer in a weird way. It was sort of just like chase after him, and then they.
No, that chase was long. Then they still jumped back in the car, and then he drove off.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. And then they were still driving. And then he still thought he'd lost them, remember?
Yeah.
But then for me, it was when she kicked his face in.
Mm.
I honestly got the vibes that this was based on a true story of like a serial killer who was going after female, like, especially with the casting photos at the end in the trailer. Yeah. I mean, in the credits, sorry. Yeah. I don't know if you saw that. Like, I was like, I wonder if this is a true life story of a stunt double who, like, went mad and became a serial killer. But as far as we know, it's not.
Who knows?
Don't do it, guys.
Just retire and be glad.
Retire and be glad.
Change someone else up.
Yeah, go into theatre, you know.
Mm.
That's what Quentin Tarantino is going to do.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's been the movie show. Next up, The Hateful Eight. I'm actually excited. Tim said The Hateful Eight is his favourite Quentin Tarantino film.
Oh, is it?
So, I think it's going to be good.
Okay, we got...
And it's pretty modern. It's pretty recent. It was the last film before Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh.
So it's
so we're watching a modern film.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Recent times.
That is going to be quite nice.
But this has been The Movie Show.
On your favorite ORS, PS.
Peace.
Cheers. All the choices you made, you make them again. Like what you're listening to? Of course you
do. Of course you do.
Follow us on all social media platforms and engage with us. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and YouTube.
This is Ready On Demand.
Ready On Demand.
What you want, when you want it. It's Active FM. Active FM, the Netflix of radio, but better.